Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Empowerment Radio for You. My name is Stacey Giovanni. Today, I am so thrilled. I have the most wonderful guest. His name is Michael Mazzozni, and he is a criminal investigation division for the U.S. Army during the Vietnam era and has worked in narcotics. He left the military and went into executive protection for 5 years for Florida, became a chairman for a task force on child abuse. It goes on and on and on. I am so honored to have Michael on here with us and talk about the things that are really going on in this world. We're going to be talking about human trafficking today. We're going to be talking about gang awareness and his role in a lot of these things, law enforcement. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Stacey. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you today?
Doing very well, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
All right. Mike, before we get started here and we talk about the human trafficking issue and what a travesty that is and the gang issues and things that are going on, could you expound a little bit for our audience just what you're involved in? Because it's really an impressive array of things that you've been involved with. I'd like the audience to kind of get to know who you are.
Yeah, this is always the embarrassing part of any of these things that I do.
No.
I'm a bomb of sorts, actually. I've been on the planet for many years, and so I've had the good opportunity and been blessed to be able to do a lot of different things. I have not been intelligent enough to stay with one particular organization long enough to retire, so I'm probably never going to be able to not work. That being said, I pay my mortgage by teaching college courses on various criminal justice issues, domestic violence, substance abuse, emergency management courses, investigations or what have you. And I do some public speaking engagements and some minor consulting type roles and things like that. And I'm very, very fortunate to be the National Training Director for the American Public Safety Training Institute, which is a web-based in-service training collaboration of sorts, and it's a coalition of public safety people within the public safety community. And what we're trying to do is to create real-world-based training that students who are in the public safety courses, criminal justice courses, and we're even including counseling because of crisis intervention and things like that, to be able to provide them with a solid understanding of real-world scenarios and some certificate programs and things like that. So I've been around the block a few times. I've been very, very fortunate to have been involved in some investigatory work and some EP work and managed some private probation offices for a while and worked with the courts and actually worked with and owned a counseling office for a while and worked with offenders who were on parole or substance abusers. And I've worked with violent criminals and just really, really been fortunate to work with a good cross-section of the criminal justice population and be a member of the public safety community. So I come to this interview to share some information with you insofar as trafficking is concerned, and I appreciate very much the fact that you reached out to me and that we can spend this time together.
Well, thank you. Was very honored to be on a training call for Mike and his organization that he used to train police officers and other officials. I was honored with that, and I came on as an expert, as a survivor of abuse, and I thank you again for that. That was really an honor to do that. Mike, you know, today we're going to talk about some human trafficking issues. It is rampant. It is rampant. And you've dealt in that area. I kind of wanted to go over some things. Just in your standpoint, how pervasive is the human trafficking problem in the United States?
Well, you know, January, I don't know if you knew this or not, but January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. I didn't know if you knew that or not. January 11th is actually Human Trafficking Awareness Day. And the reason that we have these days is to cause us to sit back and to take a look at a situation which is globally pervasive, and which is calling for increased sanctions against those offenders and increased public awareness to reduce the number of victims that we have out there. Let me tell you how simple it is. And one of the interesting segments of the criminal justice population that helps us to be more aware of the pervasiveness of human trafficking is in our domestic violence offenders. One of the things that I want to do if I'm going to be a DV offender, and there's a huge difference. I try to make sure that my students really appreciate the difference between domestic violence and anger management. I really wish that we would change the term domestic violence to domestic abuse, because the connotation of saying domestic violence means that there's always physical interaction that takes place. And that is not necessarily the case. In a case of domestic abuse, you can have financial abuse, psychological abuse, you know, you can have physical abuse. There's all kinds of different kinds of abusive behaviors that are part of the typology of domestic violence offender. But it doesn't always center on violence. Now, the interesting thing about human trafficking is, if I'm a DV offender, if I'm that personality profile where I need to maintain power and control over another human being, I can simply buy another human being. I don't have to, you know, American women, if we're doing this from a male abuser standpoint, American women are kind of a pain, you know, for the abuser. I mean, I hate to say this, Stacey, but, you know, they want to be dated and they want to be wined and dined and they have all these relationship issues. And, you know, that just gets in my way if I want to be abusive to somebody and own them. So this is where human trafficking can play an excellent role in being able to fulfill, you know, my inventory requirements. And I'm coming at this from a perspective where I'm not making light of the situation at all. I'm coming at this from the perspective of how casually this very intense subjugation of another human being is thought about on the part of the abuser. And from a law enforcement perspective, how we need to get into, from a psychological profiling perspective, how we need to get into the head of the abuser. And so let me tell you how easy it is, at least in my neck of the woods, which tends to be, I'm up in the North Atlanta area, but for various reasons, I don't want to disclose too much personal information. So let's say I'm in the Northern Atlanta area, where I'm telling you right now that there's some very concentrated areas of criminal activity. So say that I need another victim. $15,000, no problem. No problem whatsoever. For $15,000, I call a contact who calls a lady over in, Kazakhstan or Azerbaijan or someplace, and Moscow. And for $15,000, they'll buy me my ticket from Atlanta Hartsfield to Moscow. I'll be welcomed by a car, a limo that will take me to my hotel. I'll check in at my hotel. The room's already been prepaid. There'll be a split of champagne that'll be available for me in my room. I'll go ahead and you know, do whatever it is that I want to do there. And in the morning at the prescribed time, I'll meet my driver in the lobby. The lobby driver will pick me up in the lobby, take me to an undisclosed location. And there I will meet the woman who runs the establishment that will help me to find my future bride. I'll sit in opulence, and I'll have 12 women who will be paraded in front of me in various forms of dress. And I will select which of those 12 women I want based on whether they fulfill my need as a commodity. I'll take that woman with me and do whatever it is that I want to with her. You know, we can wine, dine, we can have an intimate relation, whatever it is that we decide that we want to do. The following morning we'll be picked up. Okay, normally the same driver, taken back to the same location. I'll have another 12 women who will be paraded in front of me. And if I want to, I can trade the first one in for a new one. Or I can, you know, just keep the one that I already had and spend another day with her. This goes on for roughly 5 days. On the fifth day, I tell the lady who is taking care of me, providing the services, you know, this is the one that I think that I've kind of got my eye on. She'll say, okay, fine. She'll give me my tickets. I'll fly back to the States. And for a week or two, I'll communicate with the one that I picked out. I then fly back, meet with her, go ahead and fill out some paperwork. Or I take a look at another 12 women. Now, wow, look at that brunette over there. Yeah, she'd be a fun one. So then I go ahead and I pick her and I trade in my old one and I go through it for another 5 days. My expenses are covered in my original $15,000 investment. All right? At the end of that second week, then I make my choice. If I make my choice and I find the perfect victim, I mean, excuse me, my perfect wife, I'll then go ahead and fly back to the States. And at the appointed time, after I've completed the paperwork I need to be able to bring her to the States, then she'll fly down. Now, Stacy, what does this woman probably not have when she lands in the United States? She has no family here, right?
Mm-hmm.
She probably barely can speak the language. She's never heard of 911. She doesn't have a cell phone. She's completely dependent on me for every single thing that happens to her. Now, what does she have over there? Absolutely nothing. I mean, she wouldn't be in this situation if she had any opportunities. So what that means is that she has believed that this is the best opportunity she has in life. She has been told. I'm not going to say she's been brainwashed, but for whatever reason. And there are some, you know, just destitute situations. There's destitute situations in this country. I mean, I can tell you some areas within an hour's drive of where I live that are third world. You know, it's incredible. I pulled over with a friend of mine. I was riding with a friend of mine who's a lieutenant for a police department. And there was this elderly black male who was in the doorway of an apartment complex that had been burned out, and he was sifting a white granular substance. So I told my friend, I said, "Hey, pull over. I want to check out what he's got." So we pull over, and I go running over there to where the guy's at, you know, and he's sifting all this stuff out. And I said, "Hey, what you got there?" And he says, "Sugar." And I said, "Sugar?" He says, "Yeah, damn maggots got in my sugar. You know, I'm trying to get all the maggots out of my sugar. Damn things, blah, blah, expletive deleted." And that's what this poor guy had, was a bag of sugar he'd scarfed from someplace, and you know, creatures had gotten into it. So, you know, that's all that he had. That was all that the man had of any value whatsoever. So don't tell me that human trafficking is just people coming from outside this country. There are people within this country who have nothing. I know where there's some people right now who have no electricity. They're using a propane heater to be able to heat where it is that they live. They have no running water, and yet they live within a complex where you think that, you know, there's just normal people with all of the modern conveniences. And this is going on all over our country. So don't tell me that there are people within our own country who have no need to be trafficked. So anyway, so here I am. I get my little Russian over here, and you know, she makes me happy until, and then we kick in the traditional, you know, Duluth power and control wheel that those of us who are within the profession know, and I begin to abuse her, and I go through the honeymoon phase and the explosion phase, and we go on and on and on until I get to the point where I could literally dispose of her and then just go ahead and get myself another one. And so it, as an extension of our disposable society, we have always had a disposable human species through cultures throughout all of man's history. That's just an unfortunate fact of our history. But in modern times, we've done a really, really good job of being able to expedite the process because we have such a wonderful transportation infrastructure. So that's where, in some of my neck of the woods, we're winding up with some of the victims that we have. So it's relatively easy to bring somebody in and have complete control. And if I have to make a choice as a professional abuser, as a chronic abuser, if I need to make a choice between investing my time and effort and resources into somebody who is local, who has a family, they go to a church, they have a cell phone, they understand 911, they understand what police do, they trust the police as compared to most countries, you know, overseas, not trusting the police because of, you know, the fact that they can't, then who am I going to pick? Heck, I'm going to go with whatever is easiest and whatever gives me the most power and control over another human being, because that's my joy. That's where I get off. That's the reason I do this. It's not, you know, a lot of people think human trafficking is just for the sex. That's not it at all. A lot of the reason for human trafficking is it's an asset. I can make money off this individual. We can buy and sell human beings all day long. We can buy them for $1 or $5 a piece. We can sell them for $200. I mean, talking about low-level human beings that are going to be servants and maids and housekeepers and things like that. So, you know, human life, $1, $5, hey, no problem. And over the next 50 years, I'm guaranteeing you, over the next 50 years, we're going to be buying human beings for $1 and $5, harvesting their organs and then selling their organs out. But that's a whole other conversation.
I read about that as well. That's beyond unbelievable that there, you know, and a lot of people, when they think of human trafficking, they think of a prostitution or for the domestic service part of it. But, you know, that's a very non-known situation that people are actually trafficked for their, to harvest their organs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, it used to be that the number one global illegal business is still drugs. Will probably always be drugs. Man has been using drugs. You know, if you get into it from a tactical and strategic perspective, we like to refer to it as psychochemical warfare. But you know, the ancient Chinese would use opiates and prostitutes when they were going into battle. And they would send the opiates and the prostitutes across into enemy lines so that the enemies would get tanked up and have a really good time for 2 or 3 days. And by the end of it, they'd be so weak that I could then send my army over, and I didn't have much of a problem conquering that opposing force. And now what we've done is we've substituted, instead of a physical aggression, it's been an economic aggression against this country. It's still the same old psychochemical warfare. But what we're doing is we're extracting billions and billions of dollars in illegal drugs and redistributing that income where we need to redistribute it, which is not usually in my pockets. So in this particular case, now human trafficking has gotten to be a $7 to $10 billion a year business, and it's moved up to number two. I think human trafficking and illegal arms sales now are roughly in the same neighborhood insofar as the global amount, the monetization of human beings. So, you know, if we take a look at what's happening, we're seeing a change in attitude insofar as the global distribution of drugs, because human beings are actually more profitable and there's a lot less risk. You know, if you try to get a kilo of cocaine over a border versus getting a couple of human beings over a border, you can make as much off those human beings as you the cocaine. And chances are it's going to be much more difficult for you to be prosecuted. There's not dogs that sniff out whether human beings are legal or not. It's just not as difficult a process. So we're finding that human trafficking is actually one of the things that I get worried about whenever I either bring somebody onto a program or I am on somebody's program, and somebody's going to say, oh, yeah, you know, this actually kind of sounds like a good idea. That's not what this conversation is about. This conversation is about the atrocity of human trafficking and the deleterious side effects of it on a global scale. And so so that's what we have to, you know, we have to keep in mind. But there are desperate people all over the planet who are just trying to do what they can do to stay alive or to help keep others alive who are family and things like that. And so the human tragedy that is unfolding insofar as human trafficking is pretty bad. So now we've switched from selling drugs to selling people. People are reusable. You know, that's the nice thing about it. You know, let me see, Dabney. Let's say Dabney, okay, because that's not that common of a name. Shouldn't offend too many people out there. So say that we sell, you know, some meth for a couple of grand, or we sell Dabney for a couple of grand. Well, after Dabney ends up being of good service for 9 months, 12 months, whatever the deal is, where Dabney can be recycled to somebody else. That meth is gone. It's consumed. We've got to go out and find some more meth in order to be able to make our customer happy. But Dabney, she continues to make our customer happy for a long time. So, and then that customer can resell Dabney because Dabney is an asset. And Dabney can actually grow as an asset. We can educate her. We can train her. You know, we can beautify her. We can do all kinds of things to take that individual, especially if she's 5 or 6 or 8 years old. We can then take that human being and mold them to be who it is that we need for them to be in order to be able to sell them like livestock, you know, at a later auction. So don't tell me that slavery is gone from this planet. The situation has just gotten worse. And because of the internet and the global banking situation that we have now, and the transportation infrastructure that we have around the planet, we've made it much, much easier to happen.
Well, and then there's the fact, too, that they're an asset for bringing in the money, but they're also, they've groomed and trained and fearful for their life and everything else to be able to recruit other commodities of other people to be trafficked as well.
Oh, that's an excellent point. Yeah. If you get purchased as a 6 or 7 year old kid, you can get into social learning theory, social ecology theory. You can get into all kinds of criminal justice theories and criminology terms. But from a reality perspective, if you buy Johnny when he's 6 years old, and for the next 12 to 14 years of his life until he's 18, 20 years old, the reality of how he defines himself and his relationship to the rest of the world is groomed by you and defined by you. And Johnny thinks that, you know, this situation that he's in is just the greatest thing in the world because he's shown pictures over and over again about the destitution that he escaped from. Then he, when you implant him as an ally of yours, then he can go ahead and attract other Johnnies and say, hey, look at this life that I've been having for the last 10 years. You need to come on board. You need to come on with these guys. We can escape this stuff. And if you don't believe that, take a look at what is happening with the training of terrorists all over the world who, for the name of some religious faith of theirs, are being groomed from the time that they're in the equivalent of our elementary schools to being people who, within a matter of just a few years, are barely out of adolescence and willing to blow themselves up in order to kill other people. So, you know, this whole concept that Americans have of how the world can be defined and, you know, what a sweet world we live in and let's all sit and sing Kumbaya, we really need to get real about the fact that we live in an affluent society that if we compare ourselves to countries like Greece and Italy and Russia to a certain extent and some of these other countries who have been in existence so much longer than we have, you know, especially most of your European countries, we're a diaper. We're a kid in a diaper on the global time scale of human development. But because of this fantastic constitution of ours, this representative republic form of government we have, and in this environment where, you know, work as hard as you want to and still be able to achieve kind of thing, we have created this diamond on the globe of opportunity that has allowed us to surpass what a lot of these other countries have. Well, another area that we've surpassed in this blind consumption that we adhere to is in, you know, the consumption of people. And so we've matured now. I mean, we're still in diapers compared to a lot of other countries on a global time scale, but we have matured enough now. We're coming out of our teenage years as a country, and we need to look around as an educated young person and say, okay, gee, what do I want to be when I get older as a country? You know, what do I want to morph into? And so it's time to sit down, take some intelligent leadership about the disposable consumption-based society that we're in and start taking a look at a more sustainable society. Human trafficking and the attraction of people here because of what they think that they can get accomplished, as well as the people here who were in the criminal element who are opportunistic and take advantage of people outside of our economic system, that needs to be taken into account. I still believe that the, you know, Statue of Liberty should welcome people who want to come to this country, but at the same time, I think we need to take a look at the reality of the situation and say, hey, A, we need some kind of controls if we're going to, if there's going to be any benefit to being an American citizen, born and bred, and then secondly, you want to come here, fine, but come here as a free individual, able to do for yourself based on your own efforts, and, you know, we welcome you with open arms. So there's some restructuring as a society that we need to do, but we're getting ahead of ourselves if all we're talking about is human trafficking.
Right. You know, the one thing that I wanted to talk to you about, what would be the example of human trafficking that would exist close to our listeners? And for the listeners out there, before we continue, I'd like to give you some statistics on just what's really going on in the world and the real world here. There are estimated 27 million adults and 13 million children around the world who are victims of human trafficking. And you know what? To me, I think that's on the low side. What do you think, Mike?
You know, I don't like statistics because the statistics that you pull depend on where you're pulling them from.
Right.
And a lot of people have their own, the sources sometimes, and I'm not saying I'm sure that they're good folks, and they mean well, but the way that you can do surveys and whether they're self-reports or whether they come out of criminal justice agencies, one statistic that I try to always impress my students with is up until about 3 years ago, if you took a look at the victims of domestic violence, 85% of those victims were females, 15% of them were males. And everybody would go, ooh, this is terrible. Okay, fine. And those were just American statistics, thank goodness. If you look at the global landscape, it's much, much worse. But then, you know, within the last 3 years or so, there's been several reports that have indicated, the balance has shifted now. It's 55% female victims, 45% male victims. And this is the result of a lot of different things. You know, women getting more aggressive about maintaining their position within the social structure, the whole family psychology, family theory perspective on things. The history of our country changed remarkably after World War II, when it was the women who kept this country functioning while the men were all gone to war, World War II. When the men came back, the women stepped aside to, again, assume their domestic roles while the men did what it was that they wanted to do. Nobody back then had PTSD. You know, it never existed until Vietnam, right? So the men behaved and did what it was that they wanted to do. You could basically assault your wife as much as you wanted to in this country as long as the curtains were closed and the neighbors didn't know about it. And it was considered to be part of your responsibility as a male to keep her in check. And then, you know, in the 60s, women, you know, burned their bras and said, heck with this. We want to be able to go to colleges and universities like anybody else. We want to start being treated like equals in this country. And the minority started rising up saying, oh, my gosh, you know, we think we should be treated like everybody else, too. And, you know, the country just went crazy as all of a sudden we figured out that we were all human beings and we all deserve to have a chance. So women have maintained, regardless of what color they were, the women in this country have maintained this attitude ever since the 60s, the last 50 years or more, of trying to get equal rights, equal pay, equal this, equal that, and now they've got just about equal violence. People say, well, why are the girls fighting in schools the way they are, and why are we having the problems on the school buses we're having? Because we're a violent society. In the last 100 years of our society, we have been involved in a war or a police action someplace in some country somewhere on the globe, and we're a war industrialized society, and so that violence has trickled into both genders now, and this violence becomes a part of the human trafficking equation because we're looking for replacements in this society. We're burning ourselves out, and we're capitalists, and we are very wealthy. And so we're looking for cheap labor. We're looking for instant gratification. We're looking for what it is that we want. We don't have to go out and date anymore. We don't want to have to go invest ourselves in finding the right individual anymore. We want to be able to go to a website, pick out what it is that we want. I had a domestic violence abuser. Well, let me back up. I had a victim when I was running a counseling business. Where we did domestic violence counseling. I had a victim who was sent to me as an abuser, an Asian lady. I guess I could say Vietnamese because I'm not going to give you her name. Sweet little thing, okay? And she came to me, could barely speak any English. The only way I was able to start communicating with her was I got on Google Earth and found the little village that she came from and showed it to her as I drilled down to it. She started breaking down, you know. It was very emotional. Well, come to find out, her husband had been in the military. He was a Vietnam veteran, which, you know, I'm happy for him. My father was a Vietnam vet. I'm a Vietnam era veteran. You know, I'm with that. But what he did was he went to Vietnam, found himself a bride, did what he needed to do to acquire her, brought her back, and proceeded to be abusive toward her. But because he had a command of the English language, because he was able to schmoozle the local police department officers who showed up, who had no reason other than to believe what it was he was telling them, he was able to convince them that she was, in fact, the abuser. So they arrested her. She was adjudicated guilty in court. She pled out, had a public defender who didn't know any better, and then came to me. So I had to then go to the judge, explain the whole thing, put it all in writing, the whole deal. Her case got expunged. Everything was handled. But that's one way that we're finding out who some of these abused people are, is they're coming to us through the criminal justice system, and they're coming either as abusers or as victims, but we've learned enough about what's happened now through the evolution of our society and through the types of injuries that they sustain physically and emotionally, that we're able to pick them out.
You know, I kind of wanted to address something as well. In the global trafficking situation, what is your perspective on is it increasing, is it decreasing? As officials, as government officials, as local officials in our area as well, what do you think we can do to address this? Because it's rampant, abuse is rampant, addiction is rampant, drug dealing is rampant. I read an article about the gangbangers now. They found, like you were expounding upon earlier, that it's easier just to go ahead and do human trafficking because, number one, it's more lucrative and it's ongoing, and they're doing that and switching from drug dealing to that. So, I mean, what as citizens, or what is the government and the local government and the police department, what can we do to make a positive impact on this?
Well, you know, Stacey, it's called a horizontal market expansion. If you're, you know, again, take a look at the timeline here in this country. In the 60s, we started with drug experimentation. In the 70s, we morphed from a marijuana-based experimentation into marijuana and then cocaine, powdered cocaine. In the 80s, we evolved into powdered cocaine for upper levels of upper crust of society, crack cocaine for the lower end of society. In the 90s, we started experimenting with the psychedelics and the psychotropics and such. In the 2000s, it was basically a free-for-all. And now we're looking at 2015. You know, that's where the methamphetamine started coming in about 2000, 2005 or so. We've had, 10 years of methamphetamines now. So the progression of drug use has always supplied a good market to the drug sellers. The illegal distribution networks out there have always had something new, basically about every 5 to 10 years. They've had some new thing that's come along, you know, that they can push, that they can make new revenue on, that people aren't getting. I mean, now we're so desperate to be able to sell pre-rolled marijuana blunts that we're soaking them in formaldehyde, we're hosing them down with cocaine, we're lacing them with methamphetamines. It's called polydrugging. You know, we're trying to come up with all these concoctions, genetically manipulated. So now what happens? States like Colorado screw up my whole distribution network. They make recreational drug use okay as long as I buy state-sanctioned stuff. Well, where are my clients going to go? Do they want my illegal stuff, or do they want stuff, you know? So that just really throws a wrench in things when it comes to making any kind of drug money. Not only that, but, you know, these darn Americans keep building more prisons, and one of these days I'm going to get stuck in some prison, and now the intelligence community has these things called fusion centers, so I can't even violate the flipping law in Detroit, Michigan, and then bounce down to Chicago to try to set up another network because these suckers are all sharing information between each other, where it used to be the police departments had their own kind of protection thing going on, you know, where they didn't share information with other agencies. Now everybody for Homeland Security is sharing all information, and anywhere I roam in this country, I'm going to get busted for things that I did someplace else. So it's becoming more difficult to be anything except a petty criminal. So what am I going to do as a businessman? I mean, I've got customers, I've got bills, you know, I've got this Mercedes, I've got payments on, I got this nice, you know, place over here, and I got guys driving 12 buckets out there in the field selling on spots. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to diversify and horizontally expand my business, and human trafficking fills a nice niche. I already know where I could pick up some human beings from because I've already tried sewing heroin balloons into them. I've already had some who stuffed some up into their sexual areas. I've already had mules that have gotten very creative about swallowing balloons and things. I know that there's a way for me to pick up whatever human beings I need. So the distribution system is already out there. It's firmly established between the Russian mafia and different organizations, criminal organizations out there. It's not a problem finding the human beings. All I've got to do is to pick out what race, ethnic, you know, group that I want, what kind of physical characteristics I'm looking for, and to try to decide, you know, how much English do I want them to know, or those kinds of factors. Once I decide what my product line is going to include, then I can go ahead and just add that to the inventory that I've got. So if I've got an organization to my left who's into kids, well, then I know I want to keep my age range within a certain bracket of maybe 7 to 12 years. So the bottom line in all of this is these people don't give a flip about anybody from a human perspective. They're as close to the definition of a sociopath as you can get. All they know, they're opportunists. All they know is that they buy and sell an inventory. And the inventory is morphing. I'm not saying they're getting away from drugs, but what I'm saying is they're supplanting their income with another commodity because drugs are basically topping out. I mean, once you're methed out and all the dopamine flow that your brain can possibly handle is being handled to the point that you're shutting down receptor sites because you're so high that your brain says, I've got to shut down parts of myself in order to keep you alive, there's not a whole lot you can do to bring joy to an individual. So what you have to do is you've got to find another market niche out there that you can appeal to be able to continue some kind of financial business growth. And human beings can supplant that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to diversify my sales base. I'm going to keep my drug customers going because God only knows I spent enough time building them. But at the same time, I got this other human element out here, and I can go ahead and bring those in. So it's not necessarily, some people are saying, well, you know, human trafficking is replacing the drug trade. I don't think so, because the human population on this planet continues to grow exponentially. Unfortunately, the resources are being depleted. The, you know, the problems of food and water shortages are only going to continue to get worse, which means that you're only going to continue to have tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people throughout the planet who are living below any standard of poverty that we would see in this country. And so they're going to be desperate and looking for someplace to go. And if it means that, you know, they have three or four kids who are going to be dead within 6 months from dengue fever, or they can sell those kids for $5 to $10 a piece to a human trafficker and give those kids a better life, although it's not the life I would like for them to have, at least it's better than them dying out here in the Sahara someplace, well, then that's, you know, that's what you're going to get. And so that's the situation that we have to guard against. You know, that's why we need to take a more comprehensive social approach as to populations and immigration patterns and, you know, what is it that we're involved in and why we have these issues to begin with. And I just don't see national leadership doing anything about that. So then you say, okay, well, get off your soapbox and tell us where we can, you know, what we can do about reporting some of these things or finding them. In my quick 10 minutes or 15 minutes or so, I'm down here. I just want to let you know I'm down here at the Georgia Public Safety Training Center. I'm not putting a plug in for the organization, but it is a fantastic facility. I'm surrounded by police officers, sheriff's deputies, EMS personnel, first responders of all types, and I'm just having a great time. But anyway, I jotted down some things real quick. There's a thing called the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, a very well-respected organization that has a 1-800 number, 1-888-373-7888. Again, that's 888-373-7888, National Human Trafficking Resource Center. The U.S. Department of State just put out a 2014 Trafficking in Persons report. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to read through that yet. Excellent report on human trafficking that can increase in people's awareness there. There's a thing called the Polaris Project. www.polarisproject.org that has the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, all kinds of good information there. If somebody thinks that there's a child who may be a subject of human trafficking, they can always call 1-800-THE-LOST, T-H-E-L-O-S-T, 1-800-THE-LOST, or they can go to the website, www.cybertipline.com. cybertipline.com, and I think that that's staffed. I'm not sure if it's staffed 24/7 or if it's staffed and then they have forms, but you can always go there. And then Homeland Security, yesterday I was checking out some things, and Homeland Security on their website has something now called the Blue Campaign. And if you go to the Homeland Security website, which is DHS.gov, type in DHS.gov, and then under the search thing, type in Blue Campaign. The Homeland Department, Homeland Security, has all kinds of good information there. So when you say, okay, well, what can I do about it? If you call your local law enforcement office, if you live in some rural area of Indiana and you say, well, I think I got some human trafficking down here, 911 is going to take the call, but they probably are not going to expedite an officer out there because Charlie's already driving 35 miles to respond to this domestic violence incident over here on 5th and 1st Streets and, you know, does not have the time right now. And they'll log it. And you know, unfortunately, with all due respect to our friends out there in blue, they already have a lot that's on their plate. And human trafficking is not seen as a local problem. It's seen as a global problem. So you've got the big dogs after it. You have the FBI and you have ICE. But the local people have not been, in my personal humble opinion, have not been educated as to where it is in their area and what the implications are and what they may be saying. Now, that depends on where you live. Again, if you live in the Corn Belt, you know, probably not. If you live in Miami or Fort Lauderdale, some area of Florida where you have a lot of teens from the United States who migrate down because of the warmer temperatures and the ability to survive even when they're homeless, you'll find a lot more local law enforcement officer understanding and appreciation for human trafficking because they see that these kids are being picked up. Unfortunately, a lot of local law enforcement personnel who haven't been trained in what human trafficking is all about from a global perspective still define it in terms of teen prostitution rackets and things like that. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. You have women, and I hate to say this, but human trafficking is largely a woman's problem in this country. You have women from this country who were abducted and sold off outside of this country because there ain't nothing more on the international market that brings a good buck except for a blonde-haired, blue-eyed American woman, you know, as a housemaid, as a domestic servant of some kind. You have ridiculous wealth accumulated in small pockets around the world. And what they pay and what they get is entirely up to them. And, you know, they have no problem in whatever the costs are. So all of those are good resources that I know of, you know, at this point in time, just off the tip of my head.
Okay, because of our society in the field that I've been in the substance abuse field and working with abuse issues, you know, people don't want to get involved. They feel if they don't say anything, it's going to go away magically. They're afraid of getting involved. They don't want to be dragged into court. They don't want to be witnesses. They don't want to, you know, be privy to any kind of reprisals from the perpetrator. What is your take on that? In terms of somebody calling these organizations, would that be an anonymous call?
Yeah, you can still make. There's still some tip lines out there. ICE has a tip line. You can go on their website, go to ICE.gov /tips. FBI has a tip line that you can go on to for human trafficking. It's tips.fbi.gov. You can go on either one of those. Both of those, I don't know if they're tapped into that 888-373-7888 number that I gave earlier. I know that it has something to do with the Human Trafficking Resource Center, but I'm not quite sure what the relationship is there. But, you know, we live in a digital age where I can't walk from point A to point B without Google knowing that I have walked from point A to point B. So for you and I to tell any of your listeners that they can get on their cell phones or on their computer and tell somebody that they think that there's a human trafficking subject and it's completely anonymous in this day and age with electronics being what it is, I think would be a lie, a deception. You can always go to the public library and tap it in, you know, but again, you probably already signed something that says that you were using that computer for 30 minutes and so your name will be there. I don't know what you can do to be completely anonymous. On the flip side of that, most times that a human being is going to be trafficked, it's not that Mr. and Mrs. Smith on, you know, on Latitude Street want somebody who is going to be their domestic servant. It's not that cut and dry. That's what we have illegal immigration for, which is a different subject from human trafficking. In the case of human trafficking, there's a big dog that's involved someplace. So if you provide a tip, all right, even though it may not ever be anonymous, they may never come knocking on your door at all. And the reason being that you're not anybody they want involved. I'm Mr. Special Agent with the FBI. This tip comes in. It seems like a pretty reputable tip. So I take a look at it, and before I know it, you know, I find that that tip, through the Fusion Center, leads into another three tips that happen to mention the same event happening by the same person on the same third Thursday of every month. Boom, I've got myself some kind of a sequence of events here, some chain that I can follow. I'm not going to worry about, you know, Mr. Elrod, who made that call. What I'm going to worry about is who it is that is at the center of that sequence of events in that criminal investigation. The gentleman who called it in was just a good citizen who saw something, heard something, found out something that seemed to be wrong. He's not going to be able to present hardly anything to that case. One of the biggest problems with human trafficking is that they're difficult to prosecute because of the fluidity of the situation and the fact that a lot of the people involved are outside of this country. And we don't have some of the relationships that we would need to have for the immediacy of the problem to compensate for the length of time that it takes through diplomatic channels to get investigations done. So, you know, I hate to say this, and again, I'm operating just on my limited purview, but a lot of human trafficking, I think, lacks the ability to prosecute only because the infrastructure on a global basis is not there to support investigations against what is a global criminal enterprise. They're one step ahead of us on this. So, make your tips. You know, there are one or more. I'm sure there are very many more. You may find the tip of the iceberg that you allows you to positively impact 100, 200, 300 other victims to be freed and to live an existence like they're supposed to live. So your tip may be very, very useful, but I would not expect, you know, the FBI or somebody to come down to your house and knock on your door and say, hey, we need for you to go to this grand jury over here and tell them what you know, just because most of us out here in John Q. Public are not going to be privy to the details or witness the events enough to be credible as a witness. So what value do you bring to the table for reporting it? You bring a detail. You bring an occurrence. You bring an event. You bring something that's going to be logged into a database that 6 hours from now, 6 months from now, may lead them on the trail of a person who is a human trafficker. And that's what's critical. That's what's most important.
I have a loaded question here. When you're talking about human trafficking and you're talking about the pimps out here that are trafficking women that are sometimes very young women that really don't know what's going on. They may be runaways or whatever, and they get caught up with illegal enforcement. Is there something that they can do to protect themselves? How are they treated by law enforcement? If they're victims of human trafficking, is there any insight that you could give someone that may be listening to this show that they can go get help and give them some insight?
You know, that is a loaded question because it may work in 99 out of 100 cases, and in that 100th case, some young lady is going to lose her life because she followed what it is that you and I talk about, and it was bad advice.
Right.
You know, in policing, what they teach you in Police 101 at the academy is to increase your reactionary gap. The longer the distance, the further the distance is between you and I, the less the potential that I'm going to get hurt by you, all right? So I would have to say that if you can increase your reactionary gap from the person, and this goes for DV victims as well, if you can increase the reactionary gap between you and that person who is abusing you, who literally owns you, then you're probably okay. So the deal would be this. Go to a church, all right? Go to a church and explain to whoever it is that you talk to what your life is like and what's happening and the fact you want to get out of Dodge. have asked that church to buy you a bus ticket and give you $50 for a meal so that you can get anywhere in this country that you can get to. Go down to the police station and say, this is my name, this is what I've got to say. Treat me as an informant, I don't care. I just want to say what I have to say and get out of here. And then go ahead and do your piece, and then find out from him what the follow-up is going to be, and then hop on that Greyhound and get out of Dodge. And that way, you know, at least you're increasing your reactionary gap. If I'm running an enterprise and I have, you know, six women who are working for me, I'm not going to be able to chase you to Syracuse just because somebody at the bus station told me that that's where your ticket was to. I'm going to have to find myself another girl to offset the income that I've lost because you've left me. You're not worth my time and trouble and lost business to go chasing after you. But at least in that way, you've put some distance between yourself and whoever the pimp is who's taking advantage of you. You know, the problem is with this, Stacey, is that, you know, I'm a believer in the 80-20 rule. You know, 80% of the girls out there believe that there's no way they can leave their pimp, just like 80% of the domestic abuse victims believe there's no way that they can leave their abuser. They're powerless. It's the wrong thing to do. They've been told over and over again that they're too stupid to know how to do it. Their kids are being held against them. You know, same thing with prostitutes. You're too stupid to be able to leave me. No one would want you but me. I'm the only thing who's good enough for you, on and on and on. They're brainwashed to believe in their own failure. In some cases, it's learned helplessness. Either way, 80% of those women will probably not leave their pimp in this case. Until they're forced to by the legal system or through ill health or through their own demise. So, you know, we're only talking probably about 20%. But you know what, Stacey, if we could take 20% of the women who are prostituting themselves in this country and get them out from those roles, just think of all the good things that would happen as a result of that. So I'll go for the 20% that we can possibly have happen, you know, and not try to set the bar so high that it's impossible to achieve.
Yeah, I agree. It's a daunting thought, to say the least. Excuse me. You know what? I'd like to find out from you what kind of people are trafficked.
The cute ones. Yeah, the cute ones. It depends on what you want them to. It depends on what you want them to be trafficked for. You know,
right.
if I want to traffic them for sexual assault. Then I may start around 8-9 years of age, something like that. Definitely probably won't go any higher than 18-19, maybe 20. If it's an older female, by older I mean 16-18-20, she needs to be a real looker, because there'll be an entirely different market for her that I'll have to get her to, and she'll be a handful because she'll be resistant in most cases, or if she's not resistant, I'll have to train her. So you have those two markets. Now, you know, then you have the children. I mean, the real children, the 4, 5, 6, and 7-year-olds, and they'll be trafficked off so that, you know, people can start families, so that they can start their own business enterprise, so that they can take Johnny and groom him and send him through college and create for themselves this investment, who 15 years later will begin paying off. There are, you know, if you think about a husband and wife sitting down and trying to figure out how many kids that they're going to have and how many kids could they support and what are their hopes and dreams for those kids. Think about the human trafficker, the client of a human trafficker sitting down and saying, okay, what are my hopes and dreams for these kids that I'm going to buy? I want this one to be able to grow. I want these two to be able to process the buds. This one over here, yeah, I want her to take care of me. And so they'll purchase what it is that they need to purchase and put them in the positions they need to be put in and groom them for those positions. And then whenever one of them disappoints them or creates a problem, as some people will do as they're growing up, then they'll eliminate them and then they'll find another one and replace them. So a lot of that depends on what it is that client, human trafficking client, is looking for. And don't get me wrong. You know, if you go to a lot of adult websites and you have all these women who are doing various things that are, you know, explicit actions, a lot of them know full well what they're doing. And they know full well that they're being victimized. And they don't care. There is so much anger and resentment and rage in them that it's fine with them, that they know that they're being taken advantage of and that they're put in the position that they're in. In their worldview, they define their roles differently than what we think of, because we are able to sit here in our comfort and we're able to look at things from our Judeo-Christian kind of belief system and our values that say, oh, well, people should not allow those things to happen to themselves, and we can be kind of indignant about things. Well, baloney. You've got North Korean women who are picking rice kernels from between stones underneath railroad cars at night so that they can feed their kids. You know, so don't tell me that somebody who is in an impoverished area of the country won't sell their soul to the devil if it means that they believe that they're going to be able to send somebody home. Now, whether they'll be able to accomplish that or not is a whole other question. But you understand the differences in the value systems at play here. You talked about 27 million adults having been trafficked. But out of those 27 million, I'm not going to say that these are happy people by any stretch, but out of those 27 million, how many of those 27 million adults knew full well what they were getting involved in? In their hearts, they understood that they were going to be shafted. They understood that their futures were in doubt. They understood a lot of these things, but they either were in denial about it or they succumbed to whatever their failures were or their inadequacies, their lack of resources were, and said, you know what, to heck with it. It's got to be better than what I'm doing now. So it's a real mixed bag. And again, from a law enforcement perspective, you know as well as I do, law enforcement shows up at the door of the domestic violence victim. How many of those victims, I'll never forget the time I had a DV victim jump on the back of my partner and assault him while he was trying to arrest the abuser, because she's like, oh, no, he without his money, we'll end up losing our home, and we'll lose this, and we'll lose that. That man would beat her on a regular basis, but yet she didn't want to lose him, because without him, she had no way to support herself and her kids. So it's, we've got to become sensitive, you know, to abuse issues as a species. And we have to accept that there are people on this planet who are taken advantage of and manipulated, as much as we have to accept that there are some people who are so desperate that they're willing to sell themselves if that's what it means to just survive or to help others to survive. And it's against this very complicated backdrop of humanity that we need to become effective global leaders and set an example for making some hard decisions on what we're going to do to make this planet a better place.
Well, you know, and I agree with that. You know, we operate as a society under what is supposed to be logic, and you and I both know, and people in the mental health field know, that emotions do not have logic. And fear is a big emotion, and fear is the emotion that perpetrators use to control their victims.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And as long as they can keep that fear up, and, you know, if Johnny's a trafficker or Johnny's a drug dealer, doesn't make any difference. Johnny's supplying a product, you know. And if Johnny has clients who want drugs, then Johnny can be good time Johnny and, you know, laugh and carry on with his clients and help them feel positive about their purchase. If Johnny is taking care of human trafficking clients, then he can laugh with them and party with them and show them that, you know, he's got the best product for them and that they will make them happy. The clients in both cases, unfortunately, in the drug cases, a lot of them become self-medicating clients for depression and all these other anxiety issues, but that's a whole other discussion. But in both sets of clients, you have human beings who are supposed to be neurologically wired basically the same, but in those brains of theirs, there's a need, and they're fulfilling that need. And to your point about logic, the logic that they have at the time says, this is what I need. I need this brunette, or I need this blonde, or I need this cocaine, or I need this marijuana. And so, you know, the human trafficking issues are huge. And in all of those cases of being able to extricate people from where they live and displace them into an environment where they can be manipulated and power and control can be used against them effectively, we have to understand that that's part of an educational process. There's probably a fear factor which is built into that. there's a supply fulfilling basic human needs. You know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, give me shelter, give me water, give me food. Okay, now what do I have to do to pay you back? Well, you're going to do A, B, and C. Okay, well, fine. I had none of those things before. I have them now. This is my life. This is better than what I had. So how can this be bad? And it doesn't take that long a period of time to get these people brainwashed to believe that what they have is the best that they could possibly have. Now, the internet is a fascinating thing because I have not read a study. Maybe you have. I have not been able to find or read a study. I haven't looked for one that says how many domestic violence victims have access to the internet. But if I were an abuser, I sure as heck would not give my victim access to the internet where they could learn that the way they were being treated by me was not the appropriate way for someone to be treated. Most of the time, a victim will not be allowed to have a phone. They won't be allowed to have family access. They will not be allowed to go to a church and associate with other people. We have had domestic violence victims, for example, who have had the door locks changed in such a way that they couldn't get out of the door. You know, they couldn't get out of the home. The windows were screwed shut. I know of a couple of cases where the male abusers took baby powder, sprinkled it all over the porch so that they could see whether or not there were footsteps leading to or away from the home. So they would inspect the grounds before they would enter the home to see if men had been there to abuse their women. So it's fanatical with some of these people. What it is that they go through. And if they need a victim, then scrounging some money together and finding a place that you can buy a victim is not out of bounds for them. You know, they're fulfilling a need. I need to shoot meth. Yeah, you need to buy yourself a Russian bride. You know, what's the difference? We both need a high. You know, and the brain in both of them is not operating like it should be. You know, the logic centers. You and I would say are not appropriate, but as far as they're concerned and the way that they define the world, yeah, this is completely acceptable.
Yes, it's appalling. It's tragic, and it's just beyond belief for most of us. If you've not lived in this world, if you've not been privy to the things, I had a friend that was a sergeant in intelligence, and he said, "Stacy, if you saw the things that came across my desk, you would never leave your house." So it's terrifying out here. It's terrifying. If you would be so kind, we're getting ready to close up. If you would be so kind as to give your organization again, I'd appreciate it very much. And thank you so much, Mike, for giving us all this valuable information. These things need to be addressed. We can no longer hide our head under the pillows and say, okay, if I don't think about it, it doesn't happen. That's ridiculous.
Well, Stacey, I appreciate the fact that I had this opportunity to speak with you and your audience. Again, my organization is TAPSTI, the American Public Safety Training Institute. It's www.tapsti.org. And we're a coalition of public safety community people who are trying to use training that we're creating to bring some awareness in this country and to help train other public safety personnel. So we're always looking for writers. We've been spending a year and a half just getting research together. So now I'm 6 months behind schedule and putting some training online, and we're looking for people who'd like to volunteer to contribute. So all comers are welcome. Just send me an email, mpozesny@tapsti.org. And again, Tracy, if you could be so kind as to stick my email number on your radio site, in case a listener wants to be able to email me, that'd be cool. I appreciate it.
I would most certainly do that. Thank you so much.
All right.
And you have a
Thanks.
Wonderful day in Atlanta, and thank you again for being on my show, Mike.
Yes, ma'am. My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.